Chapter 9. Preparations for Departure. The medical staff were extremely efficient assisting with Rick's injuries, but equally impersonal. He realized that they had to deal with countless fighters throughout the day and probably just wanted to get their work over with, so he didn't try to interact with them. Besides, he had plenty to think about. Other than thanking them at the end, they didn't exchange any words. Rick was surprised at how good he felt. Not just healed, but mostly pain-free. His core had still received serious damage, of course, but that was his job to repair. He focused on it as he found a seat, trying to learn what he could. The explosive spheres attack had touched him so briefly, even the dark blood kettle could only develop minimal defenses against it. A useful trick. Though he'd wanted to watch the other events, particularly to find out exactly how the black sphere-throwing event worked, Rick was just too exhausted. It wasn't just the injuries and the healing, it was the utter concentration for those 2 minutes of his life. Even though he'd been allowed in, he found himself wondering if he could really keep competing at this level. Just when he was starting to feel a bit closer to normal, the cigarette-smoking man brushed past him, another cigarette dangling from his lips.
Come on, this is no place to talk.
Okay. Though a little suspicious, Rick decided it was better not to question his new sponsor. They only went a short distance off the field and stepped into a hallway underneath the main stands. Normally, it would have been filled with crowds and concessions, but for the qualifying rounds, it was nearly deserted.
We need to talk terms, but first, you earned this.
The man flipped a card toward him, and Rick barely managed to catch it because it didn't flutter like he expected. Though it was the size of a business card, it felt more like a heavy piece of tile in his hands. Rick drew it closer to examine. Most of it was a plain, slightly reflective gray. His name and an ID number were printed on one side, and below it he saw a circular pattern with a trigram inside it. Though it didn't mean anything to him, the way it glittered green meant it had to be the Jade Seal. The card itself felt both heavier and tougher than he expected, not bending even when he exerted his strength.
Don't break the thing.
The man cast him a sour glance, as if expecting him to eat it.
The cards are tough, but they'll break if you put enough force into it. Now, the real credits are in a database somewhere, but they don't just give out new cards at random.
So, this Jade Seal, I've earned it permanently, no matter what else happens.
Well, not exactly. Some say all retirement from the showdown is dishonorable, but there's different types. If you're found to be cheating or participating in some kind of felony, you might be dishonorably retired and all your accomplishments stripped. But if you formally give up, yeah.
Realizing he was being rude, Rick lowered the card and gave the man a polite bow.
Thank you for sponsoring me.
Don't thank me. I'm doing a job, and I picked you because I thought you'd earn me money in the end.
The man glowered at him for a bit, then removed his cigarette from his lips.
You can call me H. I might be rich compared to this place, but don't think I'm swimming in lucre. If you perform well, this could be profitable for both of us. But if you can't keep up, I'll send you back home. Understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Rick gestured to the seal on the card. This was a good start, right?
Better than nothing, H said flatly. You know the trigrams?
No, not really.
Well, the one you got is so-so. It's a mark of commendation, and those are always good. But the real version has a wing pattern around the sides, whereas the plain circle is the junior version. So this is a start. Maybe when we compete in China, you'll be able to impress some more representatives and get a better one.
Rick nodded quietly, resolving to look it up in more detail later. He had a feeling that he could win a Nobel Lucrum Prize, and H would still glare and have something to criticize. At least someone who was blunt about their profit motive was being straighter with him than someone who pretended to be on his side.
I decided to sponsor you for two reasons, H went on. First, I do think you have some potential. You've got grit, and you've done something with it. But second, to annoy Alger. Let's see if we can't wipe the floor with his golden child, eh?
You have something against Ragast? Rick asked.
H merely shrugged.
The boy is Alger's tool, that's all. but we're getting ahead of ourselves. This isn't formal yet.
Rick hesitated, running his fingers along the edges of the card.
Why not? We need to create a formal legal agreement of sponsorship. Here's how it will go. The showdown will still be in Brandon for a couple of weeks. I'll use that time to check on you, just in case something nasty comes up. You use that time to say your goodbyes and prepare. In that time, we'll figure out the exact agreement. If we're both on board at the end, we leave to the next city. If not, you stay here permanently.
Got it.
Let me see your portfolio and give me a number and address. I'll send you the contract so you can look at it on your own time.
Since if anyone needed to see his portfolio, it was the man who would train him, Rick complied. H gave no indication whatsoever what he thought of the numbers, simply grunted, and then left. Soon enough, Rick received a message with a contract attached, so quickly that it must have been boilerplate. Sure enough, when he opened it, he saw that it didn't even have his name, just a placeholder. Reading it beneath the stands was awkward, and the stadium was getting louder with another event, so Rick headed out. On the sidewalk, he realized that he was strangely adrift in Branton. He had no apartment to return to, no work, nowhere else he could stop by. In the end, he went to a public park and found a shaded place to read the contract. It started well enough. The health coverage was excellent and didn't cost him a thing. That made sense, given that he was now an asset. But soon after, he started running into things he didn't like the sound of at all. If he understood right, the terms contained more than a few traps. After so many reversals, Rick didn't feel anything. He just made some calls.
This isn't good, right?
Rick glanced between the siblings as Adsela and Wimmelot read through the contract on their own devices. Wimmelot winced, but his sister gave an encouraging smile.
Almost all contracts are bad at first. They expect you to negotiate. I'm sure you can make him bend on the worst clauses.
Are you sure? He seemed pretty ready to just leave me here if I didn't cooperate.
Just a negotiation tactic, Adsela
said, but Wimmelot shook his head as he finally entered the conversation.
Here's what I think you should do. Send him back another standard contract that's much more in your favor. He won't accept it, but you'll be able to see how much he's willing to bend. Then, whatever you agree on, we can have Dad look over it.
Rick blinked. Your father is a lawyer?
He does some law work, including combat contracts. Good enough that he could find any nasty surprises hidden in the lawyer talk.
Enough of that, Wimmy.
Adsela cut off whatever her brother was going to say next and saluted Rick with her phone.
You should be happy about this. Not just anyone can get into the showdown, and I'm sure once you negotiate a better contract, things will go well for you.
Hopefully. Rick glanced between them and sighed. That means I'll be leaving the refuge, but it's obvious that you can manage without me.
I'll miss having you to help out with the bigger animals, Wimmelot said. But we can badger Delson into it when it's really necessary. Just remember what I said, okay? These big events can be a rush, but they don't last for your entire life.
Adsela rolled her eyes.
Yeah, just remember how you're going to get old and decrepit and shrivel up like a prune. That's a great tone to set for a celebratory moment.
Rick smiled as he watched the two of them bickering, though with a tinge of sadness, as he realized it would be the last time, at least in the near future. With the showdown moving all around the world, he wouldn't be able to visit home all that often. That was one benefit of Melissa being away at the YLAA, since they were already accustomed to talking online. The contract negotiation proved boring, but critical. As expected, H immediately rejected the counter-contract he sent with the siblings' help, but he was willing to talk. Not literally, and his messages were incredibly terse, but they slowly hashed out an agreement. His first contract had given him an obscene salary of over 6 figures in lucrum per year, but with a caveat that had set off immediate alarm bells. Victory purses were added to his salary, but all training costs were subtracted from it. It had struck him as obvious that the contract could bind him in permanent debt if expenses exceeded his salary and awards. A naive young warrior might eagerly take the contract and enjoy a lavish lifestyle, only to lock themselves into what was essentially indebted servitude. From what he'd seen of showdown sponsors, Rick wouldn't be surprised if they liked the idea of having complete control of a young person's training. Fortunately, H dropped all those provisions without any argument
as if he considered the entire discussion more of an inconvenience than anything. He fought other proposals, however, always taking things back to the fact that he intended to earn money on Rick overall. In the end, they settled on an agreement where H covered all training expenses, but also took the prize money, with a clause that forcibly retired Rick if his performance suffered for too long. As far as Rick could see, that was a good compromise, because it meant their motives were aligned toward helping him win as much as possible. The only thing the contract didn't give him was all that much actual wealth. He'd probably get a fortune in training, but little of that would go toward his bank account. Keeping in mind what everyone had said about an exit strategy, Rick fought hard for part of his income to include direct contributions to his Graham Stake Lucor. In the end, he got a monthly contribution and bonuses if he won seals. All in all, he was actually receiving less of a salary than when he had been working at the House of the Cosmic Fist. But considering that his benefits included room and board, countless training materials, total medical coverage, and bonus invested lucrum, Rick considered it an excellent deal. H didn't seem to consider it at all, just begrudgingly signed the contract digitally. In the same message, he also confirmed that Rick's records were adequate, so he ended with a time and place to show up with his bags. There were still a few days left, but Rick wasn't sure what to do other than train. He helped out at the refuge with a few problems that actually needed his help, and on one of the final days, the siblings presented him with a cupcake with a candle in it as a minor celebration. Delson left him a condolences card and otherwise avoided him. Overall, Rick was surprised by how few goodbyes he required. With Melissa gone and Emily keeping her distance, who would he say goodbye to? Certainly not his extended family, who would only want money from him. Definitely not his old boss, Jimmy, and Henry was no longer a friend. He thought about Tom, but they were barely colleagues, and there was always the off chance that could get him involved with Granny Whitney again somehow. A brief vision of him sharing his cupcake with Granny Whitney and Jimmy almost made him laugh, if it wasn't so ridiculous. Of course, the largest sore spot was Lisa, but it felt awkward to try to meet up with her one more time while she was dating someone. Maybe that explained why she had been more distant. Rick almost decided to let her go, then decided he was being an idiot. Lisa had been a great friend for years, and it wouldn't be right to just let things go like that. So instead, he wrote her an email explaining what he was doing next. He tried to keep it professional, but friendly, telling her that he'd give her his new number and offering to show her special serums and training mixtures to his sponsor. After agonizing over every word of the email several times and wishing he'd made different decisions, Rick just sent it. Lisa didn't respond. By the time the departure date came, Rick was more than ready. He had little to pack and found that he wasn't leaving much behind. When he arrived at the location, he was surprised to realize that it was a barren field with nothing remarkable. Though he stood around, expecting some sort of lucrum portal or something, what he got was a helicopter dropping out of the sky. A big, gray, military-looking one, but without any signifying information. The bay door opened and he saw H standing near the side, his arms folded. Rick picked up his bag and jogged to meet him. "Do we have all the contract and personal garbage finished?" H glared down at him, but seemed to be in a fairly good mood. His glares were complex and nuanced. "Then pretty soon we can get to training. Jump in, and we'll get moving." "Where are we going?" Rick asked as he stepped in. H just shook his head. "It doesn't matter, because you're not participating in the next showdown. No, I figure we have a month to whip you into shape. Then you really test yourself." When the helicopter shifted and they began to rise, Rick hastily grabbed a handhold near the side. He'd expected someone to tell him how to strap in, but to his surprise, there didn't seem to be anyone else on the helicopter. Was it all a lucrum construct? The door didn't even close as they lifted into the sky, air whipping around them so violently that someone without a strong lucrima would have been in danger. Rick kept a firm grip on the wall, while H merely glowered down. Though the helicopter blades were deafening at first, an envelope of aura closed over them, smothering outside sounds and leaving a surreal quiet. Once he got used to the circumstances, Rick stared down at Branton. It sprawled all around them, like most flat Midwestern cities, but it was rapidly condensing. Everything he'd experienced reduced down to a single point on a map that most people never thought about. He tried to find the Peakless Wildlife Refuge from the air, but he wasn't sure if he could really identify it. "Do you think I really have a chance?" He hadn't intended to voice his doubts and immediately regretted it, but the question was already out of his mouth. H just stared at him. I'm from the middle of nowhere, so can I really compete in something like the showdown?"
"You think Branton is the middle of nowhere?"
H flicked his cigarette stub over the edge, and then the ramp began to close, leading Rick to wonder if it had stayed open just so he could finish smoking.
"Might not be the center of culture, but it's a hot spot. Training updraft and all that."
"What exactly does that mean?"
"Take a place like New York City. The average generation rate is far higher there among normal people who are fighters, but the city is brutally competitive. The whole if you can make it there nonsense. The strong go to New York. They don't come from there. If you want to find up-and-coming talent, you have to go somewhere more out of the way."
"And that means Branton? I didn't think it was anything special."
"No?"
H gave him a flat look.
"You think it's a coincidence that Branton has action in the criminal underground and activity from the Global Lucrum Authority? Like I said, it's a hot spot of activity. It may not have made you the strongest, but it got you off to a good start."
"Huh." Rick stared down at Branton, seeing it with new eyes. He'd lived in or near the city for much of his life, yet now it was retreating over the horizon. There wasn't much he was leaving behind, yet it was still bittersweet to see it vanish. Chapter 10. Three Weaknesses. The helicopter flew endlessly without refueling, confirming Rick's suspicions that it was powered by Lucrum. H gave him some meditation exercises, said that he needed to make preparations for their arrival, and disappeared into the cockpit, leaving Rick sitting in the empty main room and imagining how this could all be some extremely bizarre kidnapping scenario. Over the course of the long flight, he managed to get H to tell him where they were headed next, South Africa. Rick didn't know very much about the nation, but there was Wi-Fi in the helicopter, so he began to look it up. He soon learned that it was one of the nations with a dragon weight, yet politically precarious. The tensions between the settlers and the more powerful Nokan Empire to the north weren't currently violent, so he thought it might make visiting the nation fascinating. So, of course, as soon as they arrived, H escorted him from the landing pad directly into a featureless white training room that could have been anywhere in the world. Rick resisted just long enough to get a brief look at the city from off the side of the building they'd landed on. It looked like a city. He wasn't sure what he had been expecting. There were more trees lining the streets than in Branton, and the tallest buildings had an unfamiliar style of balcony. The shining skyscrapers nearby were similar, but he thought he saw a slum in the distance. Unlike the gray concrete slums of Branton, this one was more brown.
"Come on."
H grabbed his shoulder and pulled him back to the entrance.
"You can see the country in several years after you've gotten your feet under you. We have a hell of a lot of work to do if we want you to be ready for China in a month."
"The showdown is going to China next."
"We're covering the world's superpowers, but you won't be going along unless you get your act together. I said come on."
With that, H dragged him back into the generic white room. All the walls were ether-reinforced panels, high quality, but similar to those he'd seen elsewhere. The floor itself was slightly rubbery, leading him to wonder if he was going to be knocked down repeatedly. There was nothing in the room other than a few doors on the other end, presumably leading deeper into the building, but H set himself up in front of them and folded his arms.
"You can't get anywhere in the showdown as a one-trick pony."
H didn't have a cigarette for once, but his fingers twitched as if he wanted one.
"Your performance in the unlimited defensive ring wasn't bad, but it's not enough. What do you think you should do about that?"
"What do I think?" Rick bit back a comment about how he was the one being trained and gave it a little thought. He'd already considered it more than once. "I suppose I should start by shoring up my major weaknesses. That would prepare me for my main event, but also others."
"There are worse answers you could have given."
We'll start with things that will help your defense so that you can perform well enough to earn back some of the money I'm wasting on you. What are your greatest weaknesses?
Rick hesitated at that, flashing back to memories of his job hunt. This time, he thought the question was a real one. In the ring, it was really obvious that I don't have a good way of dealing with ranged attacks, particularly ones at sonic or higher speeds. H waved the answer aside.
You're incompetent there, yes, but forget about the ring for now. Say you're in an actual fight for your life. What do you change about yourself right now to survive it?
Well, I'm really lacking a technique, Lucor. If people can deal with my speed or defenses, they've seen everything I can do. I could use some kind of signature technique that would surprise opponents.
That's a flaw, but not the easiest one to fix. To really use a special technique effectively, you need to build your portfolio around it, and yours just isn't set up for that. Besides, it's not a good match for showdown events. Now, if you ever get a tech Lucor, I think it should be a utility. We'll deal with that later, but right now, we're talking about your weaknesses.
I think you already know what they are. I've given you my best guesses.
As I see it, you have three major weaknesses.
H raised his hand with three fingers and began lowering them one by one.
Ranged attacks is one. Good job noticing the obvious. But more importantly, you're lacking full situational awareness. Your instincts are good enough, barely, but at this level of competition, you need some sort of lucrum-based support.
That makes sense. Rick nodded along, otherwise waiting for the third point.
Finally, your technique is sloppy and impractical.
Frowning, Rick examined his trainer more carefully. It obviously wasn't a joke, since H probably didn't know what those were, but he wasn't sure how to interpret it. I didn't think I'd be winning any style competitions, but I tried to develop what I thought worked.
Oh, it isn't awful. I reviewed your fights in that multi-tier tournament, and they didn't make me vomit. But focusing on the practical tends to open smaller weaknesses.
H unfolded his arms and rolled his shoulders.
Try to hit me and I'll show you what I mean.
It was a simple enough request, but Rick paused. He realized that for all his training, he'd almost never sparred with someone he considered a mentor. At his old job at the gym, he'd sparred with people stronger than him all the time, but this was different. Though it didn't change what he needed to do, it felt surreal to step forward and attempt to hit H. Rick started with an experimental punch, and H simply slipped aside, footwork cautious and movement smooth. He tried again, aiming directly for his opponent's core, this time forcing some blocks. As Rick felt out his opponent, sensing no particular style, he sped up until he finished with a burst of speed and slammed his elbow into his opponent's chest. Or tried. Rick realized his elbow had been caught and tried to pull back, only for a wave of aura to send him heels overhead to the ground. The rubbery floor was surprisingly soft, likely painless even without his defensive core, but being so easily blocked stung a bit. Rick pulled himself up and saw H simply waiting, so he raised his fists and tried again. Again, they made contact several times, but now Rick was familiar enough with his opponent to notice something odd. H was exactly as fast as he was. Normally, with lucrum flowing through two fighters, one of them would have a slight edge, allowing for or requiring different techniques. It couldn't be accidental, yet Rick still failed to break through. Using his bunion step core wouldn't be effective, but his basic offensive lucor could help his speed a little. Rick focused on it, striking at a greater speed, only to find that H matched him exactly. He was keeping them even, forcing the fight to be about pure hand-to-hand skill. And once again, when Rick attempted to get in close, he failed. H caught his knee, turned aside his elbow, and knocked him to the ground with another wave of force. This time, Rick managed to catch himself as he tumbled over the floor, but there was no getting around the fact that he was being soundly beaten. No, not beaten. He was being outfought. Grimacing, Rick set his feet, then burst forward in a bunion step that propelled him forward as quickly as he could manage. He had a split second to see his opponent's arm, then he slammed back against the floor.
That's what I mean.
H lowered his arm and stared down at him.
Many lucrum fighters are actually terrible at melee combat, but they have enough speed and strength to overwhelm their opponents. You aren't as abysmal as that, but you have some bad habits. For example, you're overly reliant on elbow strikes. They might work with superior speed, but against an equal opponent, your range is simply too limited.
But usually I have a speed edge, or I'm not trying to outspeed my opponent at all.
That's no excuse for sloppiness. Why exactly did you choose this style?
Though the question came scornfully, Rick realized after a moment that it was actually sincere. He slowly got to his feet, deciding to be honest. Throwing punches is too risky. When I was younger, I saw a man punch a defensive core and shatter a bunch of bones in his hand. I thought elbows and knees were better supported, so I started training Muay Thai.
Avoiding catastrophic injury is a reasonable decision.
Instead of more invective, H simply nodded to him.
But it's holding you back now. I'm not suggesting that you completely change what you know, but as you increase the strength of your lucors, we also need to improve your combat instincts.
Seems fair. Rick rubbed his neck where it had been struck. But that won't keep me from running straight into opponents.
Yes, that's a weakness. That lucor will either need to be dissolved or will adapt. Let's review your portfolio.
H waved a hand and a screen manifested in the air, listing his familiar cores. Name, Rick Hunter. Ether tier, 12. Ether score, 442. Lucrum generation, 87,100. Current lucrum, 23,750. Rick Hunter's Lucrima portfolio. Foundation, 3,700, level 6. Dark Blood Kettle, 17,100, level 4. Offensive Lucor, 13,400, level 7. Defensive Lucor, 37,000, level 9. Bunyan Step, 15,150, level 8. Graham's Stake, 23,950, level 4. Demonic Bond, Buffed Gage and Yithsel, 750, stage 1. Demon Mass, 500, N.A. Total Lucrum, 111,050.
This Bunyan Step Core is actually surprisingly advanced, H said after observing briefly. I wouldn't have expected you to have the materials for it, but it seems you've scrounged up a few. So we'll keep it and train you in footwork designed for supersonic speeds. You aren't completely brain dead, so combined with improved sensory capabilities, it should be adequate.
The advancement of the Lucor must have been at least in part due to Tom and Damien, so Rick silently thanked the two. He liked the idea of learning more advanced footwork, since he could understand how conventional martial arts fell behind eventually. But as H continued to speak, he liked the sound of the plan much less.
This dark blood kettle is adequate. It will do for a secondary foundation, at least for now. But your base foundation is dull beyond belief, and this offensive lucor is frankly pathetic. We're going to melt both down and form something called the Midas Foundation. That will serve as a real base for power that can hold the other remaining lucors.
Wait, you want me to entirely transform my foundation? Rick didn't want to cause problems on his first day, but to completely change his portfolio like that. Just what is this Midas Foundation?
It's a proprietary foundation type that is best suited for you. Don't worry, you won't lose any overall generation rate. Some things about your base skills will change, but it will put you on the right path.
You said you wanted me ready in a month. Completely transforming a foundation and getting me back into fighting shape would take longer than that. H waved vaguely.
Sometimes there are more important things than short-term strength.
No, that... If you really want me to use this Midas Foundation, I need it explained to me a lot better than that.
It's a bit beyond your current level of understanding.
Then I don't think I'm qualified to use it. There has to be another solution. Though H glared at him, when Rick didn't back down, the man let out an irritated growl.
I suppose a clumsier solution would be giving you a new lucor that will cover your deficiencies. A new foundation would be the superior choice, but I'll give you a chance. If you can meet every single mark I set for your base skills, I'll let you try the Lucor solution. If not, you remake your foundation.
Rick hesitated, but knew that he didn't have much leverage.
Deal.
I'm willing to look into the new foundation if you can convince me. I just want to know what I'm getting into.
Most of it will be familiar. Take a break while I assemble some materials, then I'll show you what you'll be working with to start.
Finally, Rick was allowed to enter one of the other doors, which was thankfully not as blank as the training chamber. Unfortunately, it was a rather spare room with nothing but a cot, a shelf, a table, and a chair. Was this where he would be training for the next month? Not much worse than his cabin, he supposed, and probably better than his old apartment. Alone for a while, Rick took his luggage from the other room and set it on the bed. He investigated the shelf more carefully, but it only had a few books on Lucrum that had nothing to do with him and some metal containers. Those containers proved to have ration packs that struck him as military, yet not in a way he could specifically pinpoint. The contents proved to be sandpapery nutrient bars, but they were at least filling. Accepting that this was where he would pursue his next goal, Rick sat down on the bed and began his usual exercises. He was only partway done when H entered the room again, carrying what looked like a mechanic's tool case. It opened to reveal a sizzling rainbow of vials and pills.
We won't start you on high-end philosopher's elixir yet, but we'll begin with the more difficult supplements, H said as he removed select items. There's no sense wasting money on you if you're going to prove to be an idiot. But just enduring these should be enough to prepare you for whichever step comes next.
When he closed the case, H had removed a glowing thermos, two pills and six vials, and three rubber balls. Rick looked at them, trying to figure out if they were containers for something, or God forbid, giant pills, but they appeared to be completely normal rubber. What are these for? H regarded him flatly.
If you're going to ignore the Midas Foundation like a clown, you need to learn how to juggle.
Chapter 11, Juggling Training. The juggling thing was not a joke. When Rick was exhausted from all his physical and lucrum training, he picked up the rubber balls and learned how to juggle. Most of his routine was completely coherent, but not that. Every morning he took a number of pills along with breakfast, which proved challenging on their own. He could feel them burning through his system. Most of the morning was spent on fundamental lucrum exercises, trimming the fat and gathering free lucrum for a new lucor, or a foundation, if his performance proved inadequate. In the afternoons, H trained him mercilessly with sparring sessions that ended with a burst of aura the instant he fell into old habits. It would take a long time to retrain old habits, so whenever H became too frustrated, they switched to training his new footwork. That captured Rick's attention easily, helping him move more freely with the bunion step and smoothly use it in multiple directions. By the evening, he was exhausted and battered, risking overtraining. Though he technically had the evenings free, he was given reading to complete, and he wanted to do some training of his own. He couldn't risk pushing himself past the breaking point, but he could draw up the dark blood kettle to absorb what he'd experienced in the day. After all of that, he collapsed exhausted every night. Fortunately, their rooms were nearly completely soundproof, and he controlled the lights, so there was nothing to keep him from getting great nights of sleep, which meant he could rise early to begin the next day. There seemed to be absolutely nothing stopping him from leaving, so Rick didn't mind his seclusion. He had internet access and had done enough research to find out that they were staying at a perfectly normal, if expensive, training center. They had half the top floor entirely to themselves, forming a series of bedrooms and supply closets alongside the main training room. Occasionally, through an open door, he heard staff in the hallway, but they never disturbed him. It was actually possible to order room service, though Rick decided that was unnecessary extravagance. He kept eating the awful nutrient bars and whatever else he was given to balance his diet. If he was here to train, he was going to train. H himself came and went, aside from their core afternoon training sessions. Though he had set up in one of the other bedrooms, and it was the only room that was locked, when Rick got a look inside, it was completely empty. Most of his mentor's time was spent away from the training center, monitoring the developing showdown events and looking for other talent. It made Rick wonder if H had been training anyone else while in Branton, but H refused to answer irrelevant questions by simply ignoring them. Overall, Rick was reasonably comfortable, both with his situation and his decision. The one fly in the ointment was the Midas Foundation,
which bothered him in a way he couldn't quite pin down. Research online turned up absolutely nothing, so either it really was extremely proprietary, or it was going by another name. Either way, Rick was more comfortable strengthening what he already knew than abandoning it for something else. Though his life was mostly training, it was satisfying enough. He could still video chat with Melissa from time to time, and there were no longer any major distracting concerns about his life. So long as he kept up with the brutal training regimen, he was getting paid to train and padding his investment lucores. It didn't get much better than that. Juggling proved a little obnoxious since it seemed irrelevant, but Rick set himself to it. After a few video tutorials and some practice, he managed to get the basics. Since he only had 3 balls, it wasn't overly difficult. A week into their schedule, when H arrived for their sparring session, Rick was waiting for him and juggling 3 balls.
"Congratulations on your basic hand-eye coordination." H reached out and snatched all 3 balls from him. "I'll have a heavier set of them for you tomorrow."
Obviously, there's no showdown juggling event. Rick was never sure how far he could push H, but he decided that after a week of being obedient, he had some slack. "I assume you're doing this as some sort of classic indirect training, as opposed to just busy work?"
"If that's so, then why question the wisdom of my training?"
"You're just going to give me slightly heavier versions? That's too easy. If you want me to grow, you should challenge me. Show me your endgame here." For several long seconds, H glared at him, and then, to Rick's shock, a tortured sort of smile passed across his face.
"Maybe you're right. Fine, take them back and we'll do this in a different order. Start juggling again."
Blinking, Rick caught the balls as they were tossed to him and began his usual pattern. It went fine until H tried to punch him in the face. On instinct, Rick dodged away, but that meant that the rubber balls fell to the ground. H merely grunted, "Again," and kicked the balls at him. The second time, Rick managed to shift just his head to avoid the first punch, but the second was a body blow. Somehow he managed to jerk his elbow down to deflect the strike in between throwing 1 ball and catching another. Yet the next moment, H kicked him directly in the chest, sending him falling backwards and obviously losing his juggling pattern.
"You'll be ready when you can keep juggling through all of that."
H ignored him and walked over to his room, dragging out his case of tools. Rick stared at him a while, and when no further explanation was forthcoming, decided to object again.
"Do you mean that my defenses need to be so good that I can stay completely in place? Maybe I could do it with enough defense or speed, but even if I could, wouldn't that be forming weird habits?"
"I may not be a hand-to-hand specialist, but you're not going to become strong enough to stop me that way. No, you need to keep juggling through taking hits."
Rick narrowed his eyes. "That's not possible. The physics of it don't make any sense if you're knocking me around, not unless you mean anticipate what will happen so far ahead."
"No, you're going to juggle with pure aura, like this."
H found what he wanted and rose, holding 3 silver spheres in one hand. He started to juggle them one-handed until they began to spin on their own. While H kept his hand flat and approached him, the spheres spun in a circle above his hand.
"The problem with this technique is that it requires you to be able to multitask far better than most warriors can. So, we started with normal juggling to get you used to it."
"But these weren't the spheres you wanted me to use."
Rick reached out to snatch one of them, his hand easily breaking the aura, sending the spheres circling. When it touched his palm, however, a shiver passed through his entire body. Gasping, Rick dropped down to 1 knee, struggling to hold up the silver sphere. It buzzed and vibrated strangely, but the worst part was the ripples it sent through his lucrama soul. As if it had been designed to disrupt the normal smooth flow of his lucrum and his aura, and that was probably exactly what they had been designed to do.
"Now you're seeing it. Try all 3.
H dropped the other 2 spheres into his hands. Though Rick made a couple abortive attempts to juggle, he soon realized he'd just humiliate himself. Simply holding his balance and maintaining his aura was difficult while holding the disruptive spheres. Just gaining the ability to do that would be training of a sort, though he suspected there was a deeper meaning still coming. Instead of pushing further, Rick decided to focus fully on advancing. He was eager for the challenge for its own sake,
Plus, he'd actually impressed H a little. Best to not waste any of that.
Rick stopped trying to juggle and just rotated the spheres in one hand, struggling against their effect.
I obviously need more time to adjust to these, Rick said. So, the final goal is to be able to juggle these with my aura while engaging in real combat.
That will be the sign that you're ready, but it's not the goal.
H glanced toward his case of supplies, his face again sour.
I don't have them on hand, since I still think this is an inferior path for you. But in the end, you'll create tools in place of the spheres. Instead of fighting you, they'll assist you. But if you try to use them without sufficient presence of mind, you'll just hurt yourself worse than you usually do.
Got it. Knowing what I'm going for makes this a lot more interesting.
But the spheres were starting to make his entire arm numb, so Rick had to set them down.
You're right that those are a bit much for me, so maybe it would be better to...
No, I was softballing you. Let's take this up a notch.
H flicked a finger and the rubber balls flew to his hand.
I have two more exercises for you. Maintaining normal juggling while releasing fully powered strikes and juggling using aura. Try to master the disruptive effect in your own time.
And then we fuse all three together.
Don't get ahead of yourself. See if you can kick me without falling over.
H shifted into a defensive stance and urged him to strike, so Rick began with the new exercise. It felt bizarre to be juggling while trying to kick at an opponent, but now that he understood the true purpose of the task, he was far more motivated. Keeping proper form with his kicks while simultaneously juggling felt impossible at first, then simply a bizarre contortion, but he could feel the mental workout. After he had the basics down, H showed him the basic technique for juggling using aura. Rick had expected it to be the simple application of concentrating aura into hands that could manipulate matter, a common trick to those who could afford it. Instead, it proved to be something much more fascinating. Instead of his aura flowing with his breaths, H taught him how to develop a swirling pattern. His aura surrounded the spheres and caught them up in it, so they rotated completely naturally. At least, that was the idea. Rick couldn't crack such an unusual technique in their first session, and H only pressed him until it was clear he truly understood the underlying premise. Rick smiled and dropped back onto the floor, letting his aura relax. It had been a strange workout, but he could understand the benefits. He was unclear on what purpose the final spheres would serve, but he theorized that they would be part of the technique that would improve his sensory capabilities.
What are you doing?
H glowered down at him.
We've been training for a while, Rick groaned as he got back to his feet. Just taking a little break.
We haven't been training at all. This was extracurricular work because you got too big for your britches, so the clock hasn't started on our usual sparring.
H cracked his knuckles on one hand.
Today, I think we're going to work on your defensive footwork. Thoroughly.
Though Rick winced in anticipation of the bruises to come, he found himself grinning. Chapter 12. Showdown Celebrity. Nearly a week later, Rick had made significant progress on all three fronts, but was nowhere near ready to combine them. The parts of him that had remained a little skeptical if juggling could really expand his mind to prepare for other techniques had been completely convinced. He felt more alert in his normal life, and the effect was even more obvious when using Lucrum. Until that point, he hadn't realized just how much he tended to focus on a single Lucor at a time. When he needed to use a Bunyan step, there was a moment of delay when he gathered his Lucrumisole around it. Even his defensive core, which continued to operate passively, didn't function at its full potential except when he was bracing it, leaving him more vulnerable to surprise attacks. Had he tried to learn a fancy new technique that required constant use, like Tom's lightning, Rick was sure that it would have made him a clumsier fighter. But now, he could bolster his defensive core barely even thinking about it, while simultaneously using a Bunyan step and attacking, and juggling. Yet H wasn't satisfied. He was basically never satisfied, but whatever he had in mind obviously required more. During one of their sparring sessions, Rick's control completely broke down. The spheres kept rotating on instinct, drawing more of his focus than anything else, but his aura spluttered out and he tripped over his own feet. After eating a faceful of floor padding,
Rick slowly pushed himself up, trying to figure out what had happened.
Guess you pushed a bit too far.
H stood over him with nothing like concern, but there was no scorn in his expression.
You're already training as much as your intellectual capacity can handle, so let's change things up in a different way. Time to see a real showdown.
Haven't I already gotten a good enough sense for how it works? Rick didn't object to the idea of taking a break, since he was obviously exhausted. He limped to collect the balls in case they were going to pack up and leave.
No, you've seen preliminaries, qualifying rounds, and maybe some junior events if you did your homework. But the preliminaries are over for this location, so it's time for the real events to begin. I'll give you my seat access, and you can see your ultimate goal.
That seemed like a reasonable enough plan to Rick, so he cleaned up and did more passive exercises for the rest of the afternoon, trying to smooth problems in his aura or clots in his lucrima soul. He realized that he'd probably created a lot, given his training regimen, but without Lisa, he wasn't sure of the best way to liquidate them. He'd expected H to take him to the event, since he didn't know where it was, but instead he just got a text about a taxi outside the hotel. Going down to the ground floor was a bit surreal, as Rick saw most of the building for the first time. It bothered him more than he expected, and though he didn't want to ease up on his training, he resolved to be less insular in the future. The taxi itself was some sort of elite service with ether-reinforced paneling and no way to see the driver. Unfortunately, it also had tinted windows, and Rick couldn't figure out any way to turn them off, so he was driven to the stadium without getting to see much of the city. Though he could dimly see a stadium through the tinted window, they passed the main entrance and instead drove into an enclosed parking lot. Rick frowned down at the ticket he'd been given, but it did say something about a special seat. He'd assumed that was just company jargon, like economy class being the worst airline seats, but maybe it did mean something different. Since the parking lot itself was boring, Rick simply headed to the obvious entrance, though he noted how heavily armored many of the vehicles were. The attendant looked at his ticket and then escorted him to a separate hallway. After a quick walk, Rick approached the roar of the crowds and finally reached the showdown itself. His seat wasn't in one of the special boxes, but it was in a slightly raised area. There were a few other people there, glancing at him as he entered, and he noted that they all looked like fighters. Actually, they might be trainers, given that they all had six-figure generation rates, but they ignored him and returned to focusing on events, so he decided to do the same. What he saw was certainly far different from the simple qualifying events in the Branton Stadium. All the spotlights were on at full blast, rendering the field as bright as day. At the moment, figures in uniforms were hurling a black sphere between one another as they raced around the field. It caught his full attention until he realized that it was essentially just a sport, another variant on the move the ball to one end of the field premise. The ball was so heavy that it didn't bounce, the players flashed around the arena with lucrum techniques, and full contact blows were allowed, but it didn't have much resemblance to actual combat. Of course, the professionals on the field were doing far better than he could, agilely twisting past one another and sprinting with the ball. They could probably take him in a fight on pure power alone, considering how much lucrum had been invested in them. He couldn't tell much from a distance, but he'd read that top athletes were produced through millions of lucrum. Even if they weren't overpowering like Terrigen, they were among the best in the world at what they did. The crowd seemed to love it, cheering raucously at particularly good exchanges or when the teams came close to scoring a goal. Rick wasn't sure how long the game had been going on, but the score was 1-0, so he suspected that it was a low-scoring game. Was it the main draw of the event? When the timer on the scoreboard finished, the teams took a break for what seemed to be a quarter. But as the field cleared, the crowds shifted. From what he could see of the main stands, some people relaxed or left to get food, but everyone in the raised area, along with him, began to focus as if things were just beginning for them. Athletes in tight running gear began to enter the field, but it was nothing like the local sporting events Rick remembered from school. The spotlights shone on the entrance where they appeared, and one of the largest screens focused on each athlete, giving their names, countries, and other data.
None of the Lucrum details that Rick would have found most interesting, but he saw that some of the people beside him were pulling up more data on tablets or phones. They weren't scouting, so perhaps they were analyzing the contestants or checking out the competition. As the runners lined up, the spotlights shifted to focus on a circular track that ringed the oval playing area. They got into position, a hush fell over the crowd, and then aura flared high. All of them burst forward, the combined shockwaves sending a rush of wind through the crowd despite the safeguards around the arena. In a fraction of a second, all of the runners had rounded the track, the screens displaying freeze frames to show the small differences between different contestants as they crossed the line. But a race that ended in 1 second would be boring to watch, so of course the race was composed of many rounds. In fact, the main screen displayed the number of laps each contestant had completed, as any smaller measure would change too quickly. Though Rick could track the rapid movements, he could only imagine that the event was a chaotic mixture of color for untrained people. The athletes were mere blurs of color around the arena, while the screens kept showing dramatic flashes of slow motion as they counted up the laps. Yet as he watched, Rick found himself almost disappointed. They were all fast, obviously, far faster than his top biking speed. But they all ran in essentially the same way, with one Lucrum technique propelling them forward and another binding them to the ground to keep traction at such insane speeds. If Rick had tried, he would have attempted a series of bunion steps, or he could imagine even stranger techniques that relied on redirecting momentum at the curves of the track. Presumably, the elites didn't use them because they weren't as effective as this method of running. No doubt anyone who tried what he was thinking would be treated as a fool. Yet the result was that the peak of athletic performance was everyone doing the same thing, some just better than others. He could still see how the event could be gripping, if a bit frantic. As the race continued over a minute, differences in stamina started to show. Everyone was still moving so fast they were a blur, but he saw several early leaders on the scoreboard start to drop in the rankings. One of the mid-ranked runners began to surge upward, putting everything she had into the race, and the crowds roared each time her name jumped up on the scoreboard. In the end, she couldn't quite overtake the top runner as the race ended. Though the last runners looked far behind on the scoreboard, in reality, it didn't take them much longer to finish. Yet they were completely ignored as the lead runners were championed, highlights replayed on the big screens as they were awarded seals and left the field in victory. After a short break, Rick realized that he'd fundamentally misunderstood. Those weren't the top runners. They were just the appetizer. The next athletes didn't just get a spotlight. There were pre-prepared highlight reels showing them performing, not just in running, but in other speed events. One of the names even sounded vaguely familiar to him, and he wondered if he hadn't seen the runner on a cereal box or something. That race was more hyped, but more intense. Since it was just the two of them, there was no point in dragging things out. The commentators were breathless the entire race, suggesting that a world record might be broken, but in the end, both times were over a second slower than the record. Reflecting on that left Rick gloomy through the remaining races. Any of these athletes could have crushed nearly any racing event in the world, but here a matter of tiny fractions of a second made all the difference between success and failure. Well, he suspected that even the failures were paid obscene salaries, but he struggled to imagine that he could compete like this. It also left him oddly dissatisfied. In any practical competition, other factors would play a bigger role than raw speed under pure conditions. Of course, the point of the event wasn't to be practical. Most Lucrum competitions weren't practical in the modern world. Another quarter of the sphere game passed. Though Rick paid more attention to the commentators, trying to understand the details of the game, overall he started to lose interest. The techniques the players used to move the heavy sphere were obviously strong, but not particularly useful to him. He wondered if this was one of the lessons H wanted him to learn. After the quarter, however, there was a longer break. Singers and dancers entertained the crowd while the field was shifted, this time creating several combat circles and a small hill. They even set up the double rings of the unlimited defensive ring, catching Rick's attention. Maybe this set of events would be more relevant to him. As he'd hoped, the next competitions involved more free-form combat. The audience actually seemed less interested in many of them, which he could understand since the action was barely visible to normal eyes. There was a literal King of the Hill competition that got plenty of attention, however, since it allowed for dramatic reversals and slow-motion replays of people claiming the peak. Once again, all of them could definitely crush him in the event. Yet, after watching with intense interest, Rick began to understand that their skills were also artificial in a sense. Due to the need to maintain the top of the hill position, techniques that locked fighters in place or increased mass were overwhelmingly favored. In a real fight, those wouldn't have made sense. Not that he had room to talk, since his own event was just enduring blows from all sides. They did several ring-based events, which he watched with keen interest. The ranged defensive ring was actually beautiful in a sense, brightly colored bursts of power shooting into the center and being blocked or deflected in all directions. An old man used some kind of redirecting technique that sent all attacks curving away, creating a flower of aura above him that was more art than combat. He received a special seal for that, an event the cameras replayed endlessly. Rick receded into himself, reflecting on what he had seen while passively observing. Until the announcers declared that the next event would be a special preview of the Junior League and mentioned Ragast by name. Immediately, Rick focused fully on the field, soon spotting Ragast as he entered to fanfare. The young man grinned and waved at the audience, but there was a look of absolute focus in his eyes. His event seemed to be a fight over ground, two combatants pushing back and forth along a narrow column. Though Rick tried not to think of his dream, he couldn't help but analyze Ragast's combat potential. He definitely had a six-figure generation rate, and though Rick thought he had more experience, Ragast was definitely good. Beyond that, he didn't seem overly specialized like so many of the other athletes had been. Rick could see how the others had special techniques for holding their ground and pushing their opponents back, but Ragast fought like he was trying to take down an enemy. It won him several early matches, but backfired on him when he met someone who could endure his assault. Judging from Ragast's grin, he clearly didn't care. As they were at that moment, Rick knew he wouldn't have a chance. Ragast's signature technique was a golden beam of aura that Rick knew he couldn't defend against. Most likely he could survive it, but Ragast was good enough to keep him at a distance so he would inevitably lose. Everything H had said about Rick's limitations came back to him, and he began going through his exercises again while he watched. By the time the sphere game ended, Rick felt like he had seen too much. The showdown hadn't just been a sporting event, it had been an extravaganza that consumed the entire evening. He completely understood how it could draw such crowds, but it also left him a bit overwhelmed. That night, he dreamed about fighting Ragast in the stadium, both of them covered in blood. Rick woke up and couldn't sleep for a long time.